The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Wednesday morning to you. It is A Numbers Game at VSiN, the sports betting network, VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, and of course, SiriusXM Channel 158. It's Gil Alexander. It is Kelly Bidlin, everybody, producer number 9. So much more than a producer. What's happening?
Not much, man. How you doing?
You doing okay?
I'm doing fantastic.
Health-wise, anything you want to share?
No, I'm good. Just everything's great. Just a fantastic Wednesday. It is Wednesday, right? Yeah, Wednesday.
It is Wednesday. Yeah. Okay. Just curious if you wanted to share. On the show today, so much. Nick Whalen will join us. Nick Whalen, who does prop points here on the network, will join us to talk all sports with us here momentarily. Including, well, not beyond props, but also he's also a RotoWire senior analyst, we should say. He still does that. But we'll talk multiple sports with him. We will have Jim Root on from Three Man Weave to talk Final Four with us. I doubt he's betting the college basketball crown, but who knows? Maybe he is.
Mm-hmm. Never know with those Weavers.
You never know with the Weavers. Paul Spohr on baseball, JVT on college and pro hoops, and Jason Weingard from Under a Cloud of Smoke. I also want to revisit my theory in Sacramento later on the show. We'll do that. I got to start, though, with the NBA. What a banner night. Can we say that? A blue ribbon night in the NBA. Does anybody say that anymore? No, probably not. Not that I said that either. That was generations before us.
But I don't think that really works. Don't you have like a blue, or isn't blue ribbon like the prize fair?
It's a blue ribbon day. That kind of thing. First time in NBA history last night that two former MVPs went for 50 on the same night, and the second time in history that any two players have gone for at least 50 points, 10 boards, and 5 assists on the same night, joining Wilt Chamberlain and Elgin Baylor in 1963. I'm, of course, referring to Nikola Jokic and Steph Curry in their respective games last night. We'll start with Jokic. The most points by a player in the NBA this season, 61. And it is also the most points in a triple-double in NBA history. 61, 10-10 for Jokic in defeat, by the way. In defeat, in double overtime. By the way, the NBA playoffs, say what you will about the NBA regular season. The NBA playoffs are awesome. And the playoffs kind of felt like it started last night. As we talked about yesterday on the show. Jokic played 52 minutes, 38 seconds. Who's counting? He didn't leave the court after halftime. Actually, after checking back in at the 6:28 mark in the second quarter, he never went to the bench again. I'll do the math for you. That's 40 minutes plus straight that he played of his 52 minutes plus. By the way, there's only been two other 60-point triple-doubles in NBA history. 2022, Luka had one where he went 60, 21, and 10. God bless.
Okay.
And then James Harden had one in 2018 where he went 60, 11, and 10. Again, last night, though, 61, 10, and 10, the most points in a triple-double in NBA history. The game ended, though, and this is, again, these have big playoff implications in terms of seeding. The T-Wolves had a lot to play for. So did Denver in terms of seeding. The T-Wolves basically had two miserable possessions in regulation to end regulation and to end the first overtime. And in the second overtime, they seal the win, the Timberwolves do, on an Nickeil Alexander-Walker pair of free throws. He purposely missed the third. The sequence at the end was this. Denver was up a point. They get a steal. Russell Westbrook has the ball. He's got a two-on-one. He has a choice. Either pass it to the better free throw shooter and hope for fouls, or basically, you know, try to pull it out and you know, waste time. The bottom line is he goes in for the layup himself and gacks the layup. Denver gets the board. Minnesota gets the board.
This is high school basketball stuff.
They go all the way down court. Clock's running down. Now we're in the last seconds. Remember, Denver's up one. And Alexander Walker shoots a three and Westbrook fouls him with 0.1 seconds left on the clock. Thus, the two free throws made and then the purposely missed one, and the T-Wolves win. Westbrook with the two gaffes at the end. Now, again, the big question, should the Nuggets have not attempted the layup and pulled it back
to
run the clock? I think that's the answer.
Yeah, absolutely. That was the bigger gaffe than Westbrook getting lost on defense and not being able to find the wide-open three-point shooter and then closing out too late for a foul. That's nothing new for Russell
Westbrook. Well, he was the last guy back down court.
Right, yes, but still, that part's nothing new for Russell Westbrook. Knowing time, score, situation, I expect far more from a player of Russell Westbrook in that situation. You saw Christian Brown running down the court, too, because that's all he's been doing all season. All season, he's just out on the break waiting for a Jokic bomb pass for him to lay it in. And this is what these guys get used to. And it was a terrible screw up from them at the end.
One more thing about Jokic, by the way. There have been 91 60-point games in NBA history. There have been 7,117 20-rebound games in NBA history and 237 20-assist games in NBA history. He becomes the second player in NBA history to do all three in a single season. The other person, Wilt. It's always Wilt.
It's always Wilt.
It's always Wilt.
It's always Wilt. We did have straw poll come out today, too.
Little straw poll.
The Bontemps straw poll is kind of funny this year because I feel like he puts it together and it gets released the very morning after Jokic has some ridiculous game.
He does have interesting timing.
It's been kind of comical this year. It's very much what you would expect. Shea, 77 first place votes. Jokic, 23. Is where we're at.
And it's kind of reflected in the MVP market, right? Where Shea is still more, minus 2,000.
So it did, I believe it did tick down a little bit.
Looks pretty prohibitive
minus
to me.
Minus 2,000, 9-1 on Jokic. I think this was even higher, though, going into that game last night.
But based on that straw poll, that doesn't want to make me bet Jokic.
No,
because his straw polls are usually pretty dead on.
At this point, it is by far the most predictive. Obviously, we're the closest to the end of the regular season. But these have been pretty rock solid over the years. And yes, I could not recommend a Jokic bet right now.
So the Nuggets loss puts them, I mean, they're still in third now, but now they are only a half game ahead of the Lakers for that third spot. What preceded the Jokic performance in defeat was Steph Curry doing that damn thing in victory.
Incredible.
For the Warriors against the Grizzlies. Steph, 52-12. 10-5. Is that right? Did he end up with 10 assists in the end?
Let me check that one.
I thought he fell short on the assists. What I have here might be wrong. Anyway, 52 points, and he ended up with a double-double anyway. That's the first time he's ever had 50 with 10-plus rebounds.
10 boards, yeah. 10 boards, 8 assists.
Yeah, 52, 10, and 8. That's correct. Did he also have 5 steals in this game? Is that also correct? I got bad stats here, but 12 threes he made that matches.
No, you're right. 5 steals.
5 steals.
And a block.
And a block. 12 threes matches his season high. He had 32 points at the half, going 11 of 16 from the field, 8 of 10 from outside the arc. And after he made his last three, Steve Kerr was just like shaking his head like, I can't believe this dude. Jimmy Butler scored 27. Draymond had 13, 10, and 12. He had a triple-double. Warriors move into fifth place in the Western Conference now. They have one fewer loss than do the Grizzlies, the aforementioned T-Wolves, and the Clippers, who are 6-7-8 right now. So with 7 games left in the Warriors season, what a monster win, particularly because they own the tiebreakers against the Grizzlies and the T-Wolves. They do not against the Clippers, by the way.
Right.
So it's not a done deal that they end up in the fifth spot. But I just want to say this, because right before the show, you could have done the enhanced thing on me down there at Circa. I finally did pull the trigger on the Warriors to win the West plus 775 here at Circa, because the only question that needs to be asked after that game yesterday, and I did ask this of you and Montesano last night via text, was, do you trust any team in crunch time more than you do this trio of players, Curry, Butler, and Draymond? And for me, the answer is a resounding no way. They are the most trustworthy group of players I want at the end of any game. And then, by the way, that includes better teams like the Celtics, Cavs, and Thunder. In crunch time, I don't know. Plus 775, I'll play that for the West for sure.
So I don't know if you noticed it. Obviously, we didn't talk about this anymore, but the text exchange that you bring up, I thought you worded it perfectly.
Yep.
And it was a resounding yes by me that there is no other trio that I would trust more.
Yep.
End of game situation. Got to play a whole game, though, right? I love the Warriors.
Absolutely.
You got to play 7 of these games. Got to play a whole game. You're going to have to get yourself into those situations. I think they're as dangerous as anybody.
That's where the price comes in. That's just not even money. It's plus 775.
Exactly. Yeah. So, I still got the Thunder on top. You want to do the Kelly Western Conference confidence rankings?
Oh, I was going to save that for later, but we could do it now.
Yeah, we could go through that. So the Warriors, it would be Thunder 1 for me. So I do have the Thunder 1. I've got plenty of bets on them to win the West. I understand where you're coming in with this Warriors bet. Warriors are number 2.
Yep.
Confidence ranking, this is just how confident am I going to be with how where they end up in the Western Conference playoffs, right? Warriors number 2. Nuggets are number 3. Yes, they have that loss last night. We're still talking about Nikola Jokic, and when you compare him to the rest of these teams that are left, I'll take the team with the best player. Nuggets 3 for me. Clippers are 4. This team has become a top 10 offensive and defensive team. I love what they can do on both sides of the ball. I brought them up before. I think they could be very dangerous over any of these teams that run into them. Timberwolves, I've got 5. Look, this team's been up and down, but a lot of strong pieces still left on this team. I think they can make some noise in the playoffs. Lakers 6. I am not going to count them out. When you have LeBron James and Luka Doncic on the offensive side of the ball, they could take this team very far. Grizzlies Rockets go 7-8 for me. I don't know how serious I can take them as contenders, though. Nope, the seriousness ends after number 6.
Defensive player of the year, Draymond out to -165. Dort shortened to 12-1. And our buddy Michael Montesano was betting him at 71-40-1 not too long ago. Is Dort a bet?
I don't hate it. I like it. I've finally come around to, look, the defensive player of the year got hurt. He got a blood clot, right? He's out. Yep. Sorry. This has all been who are we trying to try to replace this award with for Victor Wembanyama. I've finally gotten to the point, Gil, of just give it to somebody on the Thunder. Give it to somebody who's been on the best defense all season long.
And it sounds like the ESPN guys are starting to say that out loud about Dort now, aren't they?
Yeah, a little bit.
They wield quite a bit of influence. We'll come back. College basketball with Jim Root, Nick Whalen on a bunch of sports, Paul Spohr on baseball. We'll even get to the Texas Open, the Valero Texas Open, a little later on golf. It's a numbers game at Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
A numbers game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Want to bet smarter? Start with smarter insights. Right now you can check out Wes Reynolds' Texas Open preview, Greg Peterson's college basketball and MLB picks, and catch up on the NBA with Zach Cohen. Later today you can check out Adam Burke's MLB best bets, Steve Mackinnon's MLB and NBA analytics reports, and Zach Cohen's NBA picks. To get access to all the articles and betting guides on VSiN.com, right now you can sign up for as little as $9.99. Just head to VSiN.com/subscribe to sign up today. Skill Alexander, it's Kelly Bidlin. I don't mean to be gross. Can I be gross for a second?
Yes, please.
I probably have asked this in some form before. What is the ailment or the temporary defect on a human body that is the smallest but causes the most pain?
I mean, I know where you're about to go.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I can think of one that beats it.
The terrible name. But have you ever had a little, like, a canker sore in your mouth?
Yeah, they're awful. And especially when we have to talk for 2 hours.
Oh,
yeah.
My God. Every word.
You know what pain. I get? Especially when you dried out here in Nevada, when you get, like, the cracks in your, like, around your nails. Yeah. Sure. Those are really painful, too.
Around your nails?
Oh. Yeah, like, I'll get cracks in my skin around my nails. It's terrible.
Anyway, boys and girls, sorry to share that with you, but...
And you know how fierce I type, so it's becomes painful. I've got to type through the pain.
Torch D, by the way, the one who put his satin on your panties. He said, Dagnall should be the front runner for coach of the year. What are the other favorites doing better than him? Not to mention he's doing all this with a super young team. I think the only thing Atkinson is doing better is keeping his players out of trash AT&T commercials. It's from Torch D. Yeah, I'm with you, man. Again, going to the NBA standings. Thunder. They got to go 7-0 down the stretch to get to 70. We'll see if they care, because right now with 12 losses and the Cavs with 15, it looks as though the last couple games won't matter at all. So we'll see how they play that. We shall see.
I know that Bickerstaff took a lot of money over the weekend. I disagree. Like, I think Dags is a good bet. If you're in the 20s, I don't hate it
You disagree with the money in the market.
Yeah, I disagree with the move, because I think that was live. I think that was very live if we were talking about a Pistons team that was got up to the third seed in the East. And you could say, hey, look at this massive improvement. The improvement's been incredible. I'm not trying to downplay that. But, yeah, they could still get up to the 4 seed, 3 seeds out of reach at this point. I don't really think he's all that realistic. I think Atkinson, you could get in on a good price now that we haven't seen in a long time at -260, Or do you take the long shot with Dags where 70 wins is still in play?
I think 82 games matters. Like, I don't think you can determine these awards after 70. And if you go 5-5 in your last 10 and you end up with the Cavs 60-15, it kind of should matter.
Totally. Yeah, I agree.
Let's talk some college hoops. Ladies and gentlemen, he is one third of the three-man weave group. He might even say a higher percentage, but we'll go with one third not to cause some dissent. It's Jim Root, everybody. James Patrick Root. You can follow him on Twitter at Second Chance Points. You can follow three-man weave at 3MW_CBB. Comes to us courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. Jimmy, how you doing?
I'm good. I'm ready to rock here. I got about 24 hours till I'm on a plane down to San Antonio, get in person for these big games. So I'm excited. I'm excited to talk to you and excited for the weekend.
You see that little brag in the middle there? See what he said?
He's going to the Valero Texas Open.
Oh, that's what he's doing.
That's what he's doing. Yeah.
So Wade, before we get to all that, are you suggesting that you do not have college basketball crown fever? Is that what you're suggesting?
I don't quite have the crown fever, although had I been betting every over, maybe I would. It seems like that has been quite a play for people, and games have been flying over even late in games, but it has not quite taken over my household, unfortunately.
Yeah. Didn't we go 2-2 with the overs, though, yesterday? Or did we?
Was it 2-2? I think the first day might have been 4-0.
4-0 the first day.
Might have started 2-0 yesterday.
Yeah, no, I was... Went 4-0 the first day, 2-2. So I don't know if it's a thing anymore moving forward as they get to the very exciting Final Eight in the Crown. I think the cool kids call it the Crown. All right, to the Final Four. We have the four number one seeds. Once again, only the second time in NCAA tournament history, 2008 being the other. And I'm curious, first of all, in your brackets, is this what you had?
I had Texas Tech over Florida, mostly because I was like, I can't pick all four ones, can I? But quite honestly, they've been the best four teams all year and by a little bit of a margin, especially late in the year with how well Florida played. They put themselves up in that stratosphere. So it felt like I had to pick someone that wasn't one of the one seeds, and I went with Texas Tech, and hey, they almost got it done. So I can't really put too much shame on that. But yeah, I thought the other three one seeds would get there.
Yeah, well, and you should have probably had Texas Tech, to be honest with you, but just didn't work out in the end, obviously. Okay, let's do these in chronological order. Don't pay attention to the times we had there on screen, but Florida-Auburn is the first game on Saturday. Auburn, a 2.5-point dog here. Florida, 2.5-point favorite. We don't know the full extent of Janai Broome's injury in terms of what percentage of full-strength Janai will have on Saturday. But the Gators, 2.5-point favorites, 159.5 is now the total here. I'm seeing a 159 where I'm looking. Any thoughts on this? Did you bet this one?
I haven't bet it yet. I'm leaning towards Florida and thinking about if I can get in there on a Broome report or when I see him down at practice. There's another brag for you, Gil. I got to slip it in there. The open practice is on Friday. If he looks a little gimpy or just, you know, tentative, I just overall think this is a pretty bad matchup for Auburn. Florida took them to the woodshed at Auburn earlier in the year. They did not have Hanlockton in that game. They did not have Elijah Martin in that game. So two of their top seven players, including a key starter. And that was when Auburn was rolling. That was not when they were, you know, late in the year, kind of took their foot off the gas pedal. That was middle of the season at Auburn Arena. Florida dominated the paint. Really just kind of were more efficient scoring the ball and I think had a really good game plan against Auburn. They're going to probably make Janai get his, especially with him being under 50 or under 100%. So I think the volume is going to be really high for Broome, but if they're, you know, able to limit Pettiford, able to limit Jones, able to limit Baker Mazzara, I think that sets up well for Florida because they've just got a lot more options to score offensively. So I'm leaning towards Florida. And if I can kind of figure out that Broome's really not 100%, then I think that's going to end up being a pretty good side there.
Yeah, usually at this point, I would say I'm not hearing any Auburn love this week from anybody, and that should concern folks, but I'm not sure I'm in disagreement with you at all on that. Then it's Houston Duke. Duke is favored by 5 here. 136 is the total. Duke, per the betting market, and I think per the eye test as well, considered to be the front runner here. You see it that way as well?
Yeah, I think they're the best team. They're the most talented, and quite honestly, I've been really impressed with John Shire and what they've done offensively, the structure that they've had this year where they get guys in really good positions. They get their guards going downhill with lobs open to Malawach, or they get Flag isolated in the middle of the floor where you've either got to send help or he's going to just score over you with kind of like a floater or a jumper in the lane. They've had really impressive just style on the end of the floor. I didn't think they had the last couple of years. But if there's a team that's really built to compete with Duke, I think it's Houston, because I think you can out-physical them a little bit. I go back to the Clemson blueprint at Little John Coliseum back in February. They got to basically every loose ball, played them to a draw in the glass, got flagged completely out of rhythm. The first 35 minutes of that game, maybe even 37, it was not a good Cooper Flag game. And with the mature, physical adults, like fifth-year seniors that Houston's got, I think they can give Duke a bit of a battle, make it a half-court game. And you've got that added little element of maybe some revenge for the returners. You know, Houston's got four starters back and a couple bench guys from last year where they probably feel very justifiably that they should have beaten Duke. And had Jamal Shedd not rolled an ankle, they really would have had that. And I think five is a little big. And analytically, look at some of the projections, it is big. Bart Torvik's got Houston ranked higher. So I definitely lean that way. I haven't pulled the trigger yet because I fear Duke and just how talented they are. But, man, heavy lean towards Houston, and I'm thinking about locking that one in.
If I made you make a Final Four most outstanding player bet right now, because this market is available, Cooper Flagg is the short shot, plus 109. Walter Clayton Jr., Florida, plus 303. Jani Broome, Auburn, 8-1. LJ Crier, Houston, plus 950. And then, by the way, we'll show some other numbers here because we're showing the FanDuel numbers up here. But those are the short shots, one per Final Four participant. And then you see everybody else after that. Knipple over there at 30-1 is interesting to me. Yeah. If I made you make one bet, which would it be?
It'd probably be either Flag plus 120 or Uzan 16-1. Milos Uzan for Houston. Kelvin Sampson talked about it after they beat Purdue. Like, Uzan's ascension has really synced up with Houston's ascension. I think he's kind of their secret leader, maybe not emotional leader, but how they play, they go as Uzan goes. And that's just a little bit more open, Houston, like who's going to win it for them. I sort of buy the Knipple angle for Duke, but just with the attention that Flagg's got and how popular he is, him, Clayton, Broome, first team All-Americans for those teams, the other guy's going to have to be like overwhelmingly better for them to get it. This is a human voted award back in 2022 when Kansas won. And I really don't think Agbaji was the best player at the Final Four. It was either Remy Martin or the big guy McCormick, and they still gave it to Agbaji. I think people just default to the best player. So it's got to be overwhelmingly somebody else, whereas Houston's a little more balanced. So if I'm buying Houston to win the whole thing, then Uzan 16-1 intrigues me.
All right, Jim, sorry to bother you on your way to San Antonio and then maybe the Masters after that. I don't know where you're going. But have fun.
I wish I had a ticket to Augusta. If you got one, let me know,
Gil. Oh, no, trust me, I do not. Safe travels, my friend. Thank you.
Cheers. Thanks for having me, guys.
Jim Root, everybody, at Second Chance Points at 3MW_CBB for Three Man Weave. Check him out with all his thoughts on the Final Four. Nick Whalen, our own Nick Whalen. We can finally say that on multiple sports, including the NFL. Next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Want to know where the money is really going? Unlike other sources, our betting splits come straight from Circa and DraftKings Sportsbooks, giving you insight into where the sharp action is landing. Circa is known for taking big bets from pro bettors, while DraftKings provides a broader market perspective. That means you're getting the real action, not just public money, but the kind of wagers that move lines. See the percentage of bets versus percentage of handle on every game across every major sport, helping you make smarter, more informed bets. Get VSiN's exclusive betting splits for as little as $9.99 for your first month at VSiN.com/subscribe. We get tweets at Beating the Book. Always appreciate it. Chris Hartman wants to clarify. He says, Kelly, fuel at Circa, the little shop across the way here, probably has a small tube of super glue available behind the counter. Seals the crack, moisturize after it dries, he says.
Okay.
And you. Jesse Welch adds, my interest is oddly piqued at Kelly's health all of a sudden. Corbin says, as someone who had the Timberwolves plus 5.5 in game tied to a couple other things that hit already, I took the Nuggets money line at a big price when they were down 6 in the first OT. I thought I middled it perfect. Then Westbrook happens. That was the definition of betting in the NBA this year. That's the definition of betting the NBA, period, I find. Okay, yesterday on the show, so I mentioned this with Mark Borchard yesterday, but essentially after the Cubs beat the Athletics in Sacramento at Sutter Health Park, they beat him 18-3. Mark Borchard started talking about the ballpark in Tampa Bay and how that roster conformed to that ballpark. And then I took it in another direction. Here's what it sounded like.
And I think that, that Tampa Bay really has designed their team around Tropicana Field. And now that they're not there anymore, it'll be interesting to see kind of if those pitching numbers remain low. And so far they have. But I think that that would have more of an impact than the other one. So we'll see what happens.
See, that's interesting because what that triggers to me by that same logic, right? So what was Oakland's ballpark known for? Oakland's ballpark was known for vast amounts of foul ground. So I wonder when you say that Tampa Bay was tailored to their ballpark, I wonder if the Athletics really, right, the pitching profile was tailored to that Oakland ballpark where foul ground was really sort of quietly used to their benefit. And if that goes out the window now, does that become a thing? Again, it's only one game. So total didn't adjust today. But I think by that same logic, that's an interesting thing to look into. Today, so yesterday, I go ahead and I bet the over, right? It didn't adjust. In fact, it went against us. It went down to 8. It went over by the end of the third inning. By the way, then I made an in-game bet that didn't win because then it kind of stifled. But the point is, what I was trying to say there is, and for those of us who have bet baseball for as long as we have, and in a different lifetime, that's all I used to bet, right, daily. It's the notion of, did Oakland have fly ball pitchers tailored to the immense amount of foul ground that existed in Oakland? When you see comparisons between the ballpark in Oakland and Sutter Health Park now in Sacramento, which, by the way, seats 14,000, everybody says, oh, the dimensions are similar, but not foul ground. In Sacramento, it immediately goes into the stands once you get past the infield. Joey Estes, who pitched the Athletics' first game, fly ball pitcher. Luis Severino yesterday, fly ball pitcher. Today, Jeffrey Springs, fly ball pitcher. And it only adjusted to 9. Paul Sporer, we bring in now from Fangraphs, at Sporer on Twitter, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. Paul, I never want to overreact, but I kind of feel like I should overreact here.
I mean, I definitely think with this park and a bunch of fly ball pitchers, you do want to start looking and see if they're going to adjust the numbers on you or if it's going to remain a soft spot for you to attack here. Because I do think that fly ball pitchers definitely had it easier in the Coliseum because of all that foul territory, exactly what you were saying. So, yeah, I think you're onto something. And you're right. We don't want to overreact early to things, to anything, really. We have to be very, very smart about that. But that doesn't mean you ignore everything. You don't just bury your head in the sand and not look for anything that you can play. And especially something like this where they're not adjusting the numbers. I think you're onto something here. I really do.
Yeah. I mean, as long as they're throwing out fly ball pitchers, that stuff really matters. And this is a great sort of lesson for new bettors about analytics versus the eye test. It was Dean Oliver, who was more of an NBA analytics guy, who said famously, or at least I found it to be famous back at Sloan back in the day at the MIT conference, where he's like, listen, our eyes can see one game better than analytics, but analytics sees everything in a right. better way than our eyes do. And foul balls caught in Oakland is not something you'd ever process, right, watching a baseball game. But when you watch this now, you're like, oh, yeah, those aren't outs anymore. So the batter just gets another. So anyway, that's when a roster is tailored to a ballpark, this is what happens when it changes suddenly.
Absolutely. And people, you know, mistakenly thought that Oakland, the Coliseum was a pitcher's park inherently, or that you couldn't go yard there. No, it was the foul territory. It was 100% the foul territory. There were some cold nights. Sure, it was tougher to go yard. But when their home run hitters were on, the ones that they've had over the years, they could go yard there. It's not that difficult a park to hit homers. It's always the foul territory. And now that's gone in Sutter Home. And that's a huge, huge difference.
Day game. I'm going over today again in Sacramento, where, again, we're not allowed to call them the Sacramento Athletics. They're merely the Athletics.
Simply the Athletics.
Simply the Athletics. What is your big? I'm so curious to know this from you. What's your biggest takeaway? I don't want to say takeaway. What's the thing in this early part of the baseball season? Obviously, the Dodgers 7-0. Who knows if they ever lose a baseball game ever again?
Torpedo bats.
Beyond the obvious ones, what's like a Paul Sporer thing that you've noticed where you're like, okay, this I didn't expect, or this could be a thing? What is it?
Padres stealing bases. They've got 13 steals so far. They've got some guys running wild, including Fernando Tatis, who's already commented about it and said, hey, I was on one leg last year. What do you expect? You know, he only went 11 for 14, which is still a great rate, by the way. 11 steals in 102 games from him. He's already got four this year. Manny Machado has a bunch. Xander Bogaerts has three. They're kind of running wild, and that's an interesting dynamic. We've seen teams running more with these new rules for sure, but I think some of the teams that have really taken advantage of it have been maybe some of the lesser teams trying to get an edge. Washington, for sure, has been a big part of it. Cleveland is a team that, you know, they had a great season last year, but they kind of win on the margins, bullpen, base running, things like that. This is a powerhouse team, San Diego, at least on paper, and they're really diving into the steals. They're only behind Pittsburgh, who's also up with their stealing this year, mainly because they can't hit. So any hit that they do get in Pittsburgh, they're trying to turn into a double. They have 17 steals to San Diego's 13. But that's something that definitely jumps out. You know, I know Kelly was kind of jokingly talking about the torpedo bats. I know it's like the biggest thing going, but I don't want to say I couldn't care less, but I'm completely unmoved by it because they're not new. They're not the reason for the success of the Yankees this weekend. And like, it's just a new shiny thing, quote unquote new, again, been around since I think 2019, that people are drawing their attention to. I saw some pitchers whining on Twitter as if the like last 50 big innovations haven't been pitcher based. Shut up, Matt Strom.
Yeah.
And carrying on about it. I don't mind it. I think players should use it if they think it's going to benefit them. I love the golf club analogy that I've been hearing a bunch on like MLB Network. I think that that is the perfect analogy across the board, being fitted for clubs, tailored to your swing. Not only that, but also having it as a club for different things. We saw Junior Caminero use it in a pinch hit at bat. Maybe he feels like I can get base hits better with this, and I can get homers better with a regular bat. So if I'm going to have four at bats in a game, I'm going to use the regular bat. But if I'm coming off the bench and I need a base hit, maybe I go to the torpedo bat. I like it being used as like a club in your bag. So I don't think there's a whole lot to make of it. It's an interesting-ish story, but it's not making guys inherently better, nor is it illegal. So there's no real issue with it.
All right. Love having you here on a Wednesday because we get full day baseball starting in the morning. If you're a fantasy player today, how are you playing this?
If I'm looking at first off, it's ace day, big time ace day. 20 of the 30 guys go and rank in my top 60 with six of my top 10 rankings right now. So there's tons of ways to go with the pitching. Scooble and Skeens are my top two guys for the year and for the day. You can go Zach Wheeler against Colorado at home. I mean, there's a million options for pitching. If you want to get a little cutesy and maybe save some budget if you're doing DFS or whatever, you can get a little bit cheaper with somebody like Orion Pepio against Pittsburgh. I'm a very big Pepio fan. Clay Holmes at Miami's probably going to be coming in a bit cheaper because the money's going to go toward the Scooble, Skeens, Wheeler, Crochet, Reagan's, Snell. Again, I could name them all, but we're running out of time here. It's just so many different ways to go. Now, if you're looking for offense, where do you go on a day like this when 20 of the 30 pitchers are pretty damn good? I think you start looking at those Padres. So if you do want to save some on pitching to try to get some Padres in your lineup going against Ben Lively, I like that. Easton Lucas is like a fill-in for Max Scherzer right now for the Jays. I don't even know if he's going to be a full-time starter there and go more than 2-3 innings, but I think maybe some Nats could be interesting. I think Phillies against Kyle Freeland. Kyle Freeland's a solid pitcher. I want to be clear here. He's a solid pitcher. Still going to take my shots against him, though. So some Phillies and, of course, Dodgers. They're getting Bryce Elder filling in for Manuel Lopez. Hook 'em horns with Bryce Elder. He is a former Longhorn, but come on, it's the Dodgers. I'm obviously going to go for them anytime I can. So a lot of ways to go on today's board with all the great pitching.
Paulie, love it, man. Baseball is here. Couldn't be more excited. Appreciate it, man.
Take care, y'all.
Paul Sporer at Sporer. Dodgers, by the way, 7-0 now. Padres 6-0. Everybody else with four wins or less as they make a mockery out of the race to 10. Just a mockery. We'll come back. Golf, the Valero Texas Open next. Numbers Game, Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Hour number two of a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, SiriusXM channel 158. However, you're checking us out, we appreciate it. It's Gil Alexander. It's my little buddy Kelly Bidlin, everybody.
What's up, party people?
At Kelly by Delon on Twitter.
It's where you can find me. I'm getting a lot of helpful tips on my cracked fingernail.
It's a very strange Twitter day. You're getting
very strange Twitter.
You're getting a lot of reaction to your cracked hands.
Todd Bubba Horowitz.
I can't really read your tweet. Buddhist.
It was the most thorough though.
Buddhist. I could read yours, but probably not. Shouldn't read that either. Just a lot of really people really they know us well.
They know us well.
So it's super personal stuff. We appreciate it as always. Still to come this hour, Jason Weingarten from Under a Cloud of Smoke. He is fascinated. Unlike Spore, he is fascinated with the torpedo bats.
Really?
Oh, he just can't stop. He's fascinated with the torpedo bats, and then he also can't stop talking about the Dodgers. And then he famously comes on
not
this
a
show.
Dodgers fan,
he's like, "I'm not a Dodgers fan." Yes, you are. Stop
making him out to be a Dodgers fan.
Stop it already.
The I did catch the interview. It was kind of adorable with the guy. So what is the guy on the Marlins now, right? Who used to be with the Yankees is how this story goes. The physicist or whatever that helped with the bats. And yeah, Paul's right. Like he's talking about, he's all giddy, right? Cause I feel like it's all the baseball nerds where he's like, yeah, like we've been working on this for years. So it's like, you could tell he was excited that it was finally getting like national attention. Right. But yeah, it was interesting hearing him say, you know, some guys have been tinkering with this for the past couple years, but it's like you need success on a national stage, and for a lot of guys to be doing it, for all the other players to start asking the question, right? Of like, hey, like, you know, talk me through this.
I was watching the A's game last night, and I know, trust me, it's what an exciting life I have.
It reminded me some of like the Moneyball Saints, right? Where it's like, okay, like, why is it better for me to take a ball or take that first pitch, right?
Well, no, Moneyball, you can't compare this to Moneyball was super, you know, smart because it was basically taking an inefficiency in player personnel, right, in player acquisition and saying, oh, everybody else has these old school scouts who are obsessed with these old school notions of the sport. Let's, with our small budget, find the inefficiencies and then create a playoff team. And that's what they did. This is just, oh, we're moving the weight of the bat from either the bottom or the top to the point where you usually make contact.
No, I just meant more from the players buying in perspective of, you know, trying, you know, not stealing bases, right? That was all part of the Moneyball teams, that sort of thing. So that from that perspective is what I'm talking. It's interesting.
JVT also joining us. Talk basketball, mm-hmm. Both pro and college with us in a bit. But now, ladies and gentlemen, it's time to go country clubbing in the Valero Texas Open.
Oh, yeah. Final four. Golf in the final four in San Antonio.
It is a big issue.
We have lights in the back now. The crew is really good.
Maybe the Spurs have some home games over there. I don't know.
Well, yeah, that's
what
one
a weekend in San Antonio. The Volare Texas Open. Contare. Oh, I'm being told it's the Valero Texas Open.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Matt Brown tried to get me with this one yesterday, so I'll try to get you. What's the two biggest cities in Texas?
Houston is numero uno. Oh, it's clearly not. Well, is it the Metroplex of Dallas-Fort Worth, or we're being technical?
In our media, we're being technical. It is San Antonio. Yes, I asked it for a reason.
That's what you did, though.
Because in our media world, the Dallas-Fort Worth media market is a top five media market. So we always think of that as the biggest, but no.
I think I get marked as a correct answer on that, though, don't I?
Yeah, you did a great job, yeah.
Let me just ask you this off the top. Can I ask you a question?
Yes, of course you can.
So this is a tournament prior to a major, and not just any major, but the Masters. Does it cause you to pare it back a little bit to the point where you're like, well, I'm going to bet this, but there are certain players out there where I could see them kind of... First of all, how many players are in this and that are also playing in the Masters?
156 players in this tournament. Of the number of players in this tournament that are in the Masters, if I had to guess off the top of my head, 30-something.
Okay.
I don't know the
exact
number.
But a bunch of them. A bunch of them. And the Masters field is not a big one.
Yeah,
right?
80.
So I'm just curious, does that make you want to bet those players less?
The ones that are already in the Masters?
Yes.
Depending on where they are. It's a great question because it is something that we discuss on Long Shots often, podcast up now, by the way. It is. I think you have to be take that approach, even with the players that are qualified, the guys that you know are going to be in the Masters next week. I don't think you can just take a blanket approach with all of them and say that about all of them. Some of them are, you know, I'll use an example. Patrick Cantlin.
No, I don't want you to take a blanket. That's what I'm saying. But yes. Certain players, you're like, hmm.
Certain players, sure. But yeah. There are certain players that they're here for a reason, and they're not just at home working on things. It is, I need to get my game ready in tournament-like conditions before I go to Augusta, where I'm going to be tested against the best in the world, right? So there is, I think for a lot of guys, there's very few that I'm saying, you know what, they're just going to go here and try to work on a couple things in their game and not really care about the result. I think it's too hard to say that in golf these days. There's so much money in these purses that if you're signing up for a tournament, I think you're going to win it. Now, I'll give Matt Brown credit for this because he did bring it up on the pod yesterday. If you're in a situation, Gil, on Friday...
This is what I'm referring to.
Yeah, where maybe you're a shot off the cut
this
line.
This is exactly what I'm referring to.
How much are... If you're a Patrick Cantlay or a big name, you know, how much are you pushing to make the cut versus, okay, fine, wave the white flag, let's get to Augusta.
Let me go to Augusta. Let me get my bearings. Let me chill.
Yeah, I think that is something to be aware of come Friday. So if you are looking at some second round betting... you know, you could be doing some second round matchups, something to keep in mind if you do think there is a big name that's trailing, that could happen. I'm not saying it's a thing and it's for sure going to happen.
But last thing on this, because I don't want to belabor it, but if you might otherwise take a long shot in a tournament like this, if it weren't prior to a major, but a long shot's a long shot, and a long shot is more likely to be closer to the cut than they are to the top of the field, let's say. So maybe you say to yourself, actually, I'm not going to bet these guys for this particular tournament because of what you just described.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. I'm just spitballing.
It's something to be aware of. I think from just the entirety of the tournament, though, I've even backed off that position more over the years of like being scared of maybe these bigger names are working on something and they're not really trying to win. It's not, man, there's too much money on the line these days. You sign up for one of these events and you're doing all the travel to get there and all the prep for this course. And yes, the course, what they've done intelligently, these lead up tournaments, especially Houston, Valero, Texas Open, is they've kind of shaped the courses to be a bit more like Augusta as much as they possibly could. So it tests certain parts of these guys' game that they know are going to be tested once they get to Augusta. So yeah,
I can see if you go too much into the weeds on stuff like that, it'll drive you crazy as a handicapper.
It absolutely will. Yeah. And there's also, I think that, you know, just it transitioning to the Texas Open here, Valero Texas Open, Gil, like it is from a statistical profile. This is one of the toughest tournaments to handicap because it really is. There's not approach is super important here. This is a very much a second shot golf course, but it's going to test every shot in the every club in the bag. You're really going to be tested everywhere. Like you break down some of the driving distance. Usually every course we go to, what's more important, driving distance or driving accuracy? It's something you can usually ask every week and get a pretty clear answer on every week. This course, not so much. Like there is the birdie rates out of the rough versus out of the fairway are not all that different from just the tournament as a whole. So there's a lot of kind of confusing stats that you get from this and takeaways, statistical takeaways from over the years. So like, if you're betting it this week, you do want to focus on good approach players. Good wedge players are going to be important this week. Again, off the tee, you want guys that can gain off the tee. But distance, just as important as accuracy. I've leaned a little bit heavier on distances this week myself, so something to keep in mind. And this is one, like this one, I have a trouble figuring out, Gil, where there's really only three holes with true water danger on them. Yet this course has averaged more double bogeys or worse than every course on tour except for PGA National and TPC Sawgrass, where the Players is played at.
Wow.
Yes.
Barely
any water. And there is, yes, you can get out of bounds. You can get into gross bushes and tricky areas off the side. And wind is often an issue here at this event. It's one of the biggest defenses for the course. So
gross bushes.
Yeah, gross bushes. Yeah, you know, those are really thorny ones and stuff. The ones that prick you. You know, exactly.
It's gross.
Okay, so for bets for me this week, like I think from just a betting standpoint, how much money you're outlaying here this week. That's where I thought we were going with at first when you were first asking me. I think it is a Look, if you see an edge on something, any bet, bet it, right? I'm never not going to tell you to not bet it if you see an edge. However, if you're approaching this tournament and you don't see as big of an edge on some of these bets as you typically do on a golf week, you know you're going to want to fire way bigger on the Masters next week. So there is no problem dialing it back a bit this week. I kind of just chose to do that with who I'm betting this week, Gil. So outrights for me, I only got two. Keegs, big Keegs week. Really, really excited, actually. I think this is a great Keegan Bradley week. So I've got him outright 30-1. And then outrights in top fives, both on Keegan Bradley and Daniel Berger for me this week. Berger just continues his great play. We haven't seen him in a couple weeks now. But 18th tee to green, 27th in bogey avoidance, 10th in scrambling, something to keep in mind here. So outrights and top fives on them. My highest rated golfer this week is Tommy Fleetwood. Will not be playing him in outright markets, but did play him in top 10 and top 20s. On Fleetwood. Bud Cauley, he's T4 and T6 his last couple weeks. It's a guy that Wes and Matt have been betting more than me. I'm just going to try to see if he keeps it going here and play a top 10 on him, plus 450. You can find around that number. Still one at UC. I added Keegan Bradley, top 20. I am high on Keegan this week, so outright top 5 and top 20 on Keegan. Alex Smalley, I'm going back to one more time. Missed cut the last 2 weeks. Playing a top 20 on him, though, at plus 275. His stats have been awesome this year. Berger over McCarthy, Smalley over Novak, Damon over Homa in tournament matchups, and Tommy Fleetwood top English.
Sorry, didn't mean to run you into
You're
a wall.
You're fine, Gil. It's my fault.
JVT next. I'll ask him, if not the Thunder, who's the best team in the West? That's next.